This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Simon Hughes in England, Simon Mann in Pakistan. And it's been another intriguing day, the second test match, the first day, a slightly short day, of course, with the light fading, but no shortage of interest and entertainment. England just up against it slightly, I'd say, having scored 281 all out, with Pakistan looking pretty good at 107 for two on a turning pitch. And they have all the assets, I would say, in terms of spinners anyway. What an amazing debut, Simon, for Abra Ahmed.
Yeah, fantastic. Held back, actually, because he should have played or could have played in the last test match. And Zahir Mahmood played and went for over 300 runs. And he comes out and he takes the first 7 wickets. England attacking him, trying to attack him, trying to put him under pressure. But it didn't always work for them. And actually, of the 7 wickets that he took, 4 were out to attacking shots and 3 to defensive shots. So it wasn't just all about all out attack and sacrificing wickets with that ultra-aggressive approach. And he did bowl 3 out today, and he's got this delivery which he sort of flicks off his ring finger that is not easy for some of the players to read. And you need to see the recording, the replay of Ben Stokes's face when he was cleaned up by Abra. It was like, how did that happen? Lovely ball that slid past the outside edge of his bat and hit the top of off stump. So, yeah, it was a bit, not self-inflicted, that's not the right word, but there was some aggressive batting, and England lost wickets as a result, but also he bowled some players out. Fantastic debut. Well, what did you do on your first-class debut, Oz? Can you remember what did you come up with on your debut?
Slightly contrasting experiences, really. But in fact, I got 4 wickets on my first class debut. It was at Lord's. It was against Kent. And I think, as with Abra, I benefited from people having not seen me before. And of course, it's an unusual circumstance, isn't it? Nowadays, the homework has been done by all the analysts and the team to look at bowlers very carefully before you face them. Normally, there's a lot of footage of them, especially if they've been playing, say, in county cricket or in Australia. There'll be lots of footage of domestic cricket, which they can analyse. I wouldn't have thought there'd be all that much of Abra Ahmed. I know he took 43 wickets this year so far in the Pakistan first-class arena, but there won't have been quality footage, perhaps, available in quite the same way, or it won't have been as easy to get hold of. And actually, this kind of bowler is something that the batsmen don't see very often wherever they play. So I think he had that advantage in a way, in the same way as I did when I first came on the scene in the 1980s, when, of course, there was no TV pictures at all. In fact, I remember my dad once trying to record a game I played in and, you know, just getting the whole thing wrong and the whole pictures corrupting and everything. So it was hard getting footage in those days. Now it's easier. But in a funny sort of way, I wonder whether footage would have even worked with Abra Ahmed because he has such an unusual action.
Ben Duckett said to me afterwards, I said, have you seen any footage of him? You know, what are your What was it like in terms of preparation? And he said, well, to be honest with you, I don't like to look at much of that because it can scramble my mind. And I'm starting to think, you know, which way is it going to turn? And I just want to go out, basically, I think, just go out and play my way, sweeping and reverse sweeping. I did have a tweet, a message from someone called David Battersby. He said, on the live stream of the Pakistan website, the Sindh cricket team were featured in several matches, all played in Pindi. So those of us who watched were well aware of Abra Ahmed and his talent. He took wickets for fun, and he said he's also a good lower middle order bat as well. So it was there to watch if you wanted to see it, according to Dave, and obviously some sort of aficionado, and he was watching it and watching Abra, and you know, it didn't surprise him at all what he came up with today, Abra Ahmed. I spoke to him afterwards. The interview was done in Urdu. He wasn't confident enough in English with a translator. It was just a fantastic day, you know, for him, wasn't it, to come out and do that today. I asked him whether he considered himself a leg spinner or a mystery spinner. He sort of slightly dodged the question, but he has got a bit of mystery about him, Yoz, hasn't he? I mean, that ball he flicks, I don't think everyone picked that.
What's your Urdu like?
Well, mine's non-existent. But I asked the questions in English. He answered them in Urdu through a translator, and then the translator translated them. So UK audiences who don't speak Urdu, and there will be people in the UK who will be able to speak Urdu, you know, will be able to, anyway, so everyone can understand what he was saying.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think he's quite similar to Mujeeb, actually, the Afghanistan mystery spinner, for want of a better term, because he uses his fingers a lot, more than his wrist, actually. Even his leg break is sort of almost flicked out rather than, you know, when you watch someone like Shane Warne or one of the great leg spinners, the orthodox leg spinners bowl, their hand, as they let go of the ball, is facing the ground. The palm of their hand is almost facing the ground and their wrist is pointing away sort of at right angles to the pitch. Whereas when Abra bowls his leg spinner, his hand is pretty much facing the batsman and his wrist is down the wicket. So he's not getting as much wrist action on the ball in a way. But what he's clever at is using his fingers to flick the ball out, both for a leg break and also for the googly going the other way or the topspinner going the other way. And it's harder to pick up that because with a wrist spinner, when they're bowling the leg break, the hand is facing the ground. And when they're bowling the googly, the hand is reversed and it's sort of almost facing behind them. So you can actually see the difference if you're a hawk-eyed batsman anyway. But with Abra Ahmed, there's less distinction between the two deliveries. So you're almost looking more for the finger positions. And I think from actually watching a bit of slow motion footage, his middle finger points up more when he's bowling his googly. So that's just a little signal to look out for batsmen. The thing is, it's all very well saying there is footage around of him playing, you know, in domestic cricket and so on, but there won't be the quality footage which test players really need, and that is the big close-ups and slow-mos of the batsman, of the bowler running it towards the camera, which is a specialist camera you only get really for international cricket, because they've got the number of cameras they have. They'll have one camera which is known as the slow-mo camera, and that one focuses, you know, very much on the bowler and his hand as the ball is coming down, and that's the one that the batsmen really need, and they're not going to get that from domestic cricket.
I suppose what will happen is the more he plays, the more he'll be recorded and the more players will see it, as you say. And you know, I can think of someone like Ajanta Mendis, who played for Sri Lanka, and he was a sensation to start with, and India couldn't work him out. I remember him taking some like 6 for 12 in the Asia Cup, and it was, you know, they were totally bamboozled because they hadn't really seen him before, and it was a revelation, and you thought this guy's going to have a fantastic career. But of course, what does happen, as you say, that everyone picks up the videos, has a looks for tells in the bowler's delivery, and gradually tries to work them out. So what will be interesting here is how much Abra is worked out and they, you know, and played. I mean, it wasn't as though he totally bamboozled him, because they actually flogged him a bit as well. They smashed him. I mean, he went 22 overs for 114, but of course he was taking wickets along the way, and you know, that's fine. You certainly settle for 714 from 22 overs, but he was hoofed around a bit as well. It wasn't a day when he totally dominated and bamboozled, but he did cause England enough problems. England 281 all out. It looked as if they were going to build another dominant score, 117 for one at one stage. At lunch again, you know, they powered on to 180, but they had lost five wickets, and that was the key today. That was the difference between here and Rawalpindi, where England went to lunch with that wicket down and they were able just to press the accelerator, and of course went on to make 500. But it was a very different sort of pitch. I mean, that Pindi pitch was flat. We should just emphasise it. The Pindi pitch was flat, flawless surface as far as the batter's concerned. Now this one, and again going back to Ben Duckey, he made the point, he got a delivery earlier on from Fahim Ashraf when he ran his fingers across the ball and it spun, it sort of spun, turned in and just missed the off stump. And he said from that moment we knew that the spinners were going to, you know, get quite a lot out of this surface. So it's a completely different surface. But have England got enough runs? Is 281 enough to be working with in their first innings?
Well, good question. I mean, I think actually, going back to the pitch, I think Abra Ahmed, perhaps it was part of the Pakistani master plan to not play him in that first test, because he wouldn't have got much out of that pitch. And meanwhile, England would have been able to read his variations and be kind of aware of them and more conscious of them. And then they were better prepared for a pitch like this where he's going to have some impact. So perhaps that was part of the Pakistani master plan, is to keep him away from that flat pitch and get him to work on a pitch where he was actually going to have some impact. And obviously he had a wonderful impact. Five wickets before lunch. Extraordinary on debut. And I loved the dismissal of Zach Crawley, actually, in his first over. A few little leg breaks just to sort of get him going, and then tossed in the googly, totally befuddled, Crawley bowled between bat and pad through the gate. Absolutely delicious first test wicket, absolutely fantastic. England were positive throughout. I'm not sure Duckett could read him. I think Stokes tried to, but then he was done as well by the googly. Beautiful bit of bowling. England sort of flourished in ebbs and flows a little bit. There was that good partnership between Pope and Duckett, and also latterly Stokes and Jacks got it back on track a bit, and then Mark Wood with some lusty blows at the end. 281, it all depends whether England can find some assistance in the pitch to counter that performance. I would say 280 is a bit under par. I think on first day, even though I know it was turning, they'd probably be looking for 340 sort of score, I would say. You know, it was a fastish outfield. The seamers had nothing, no real impact. None of the other spinners looked that dangerous. I know Mahmood took three wickets and he spun the odd one, but you could play him, I think. So I think 280 was a little bit under par. 340, 330, 340 would have been good, but it's still something to defend. It just depends whether, I think, really, Jack Leach can get more consistent and get into the Pakistani middle order, because he wasn't, although he was getting the odd ball to turn, he wasn't putting them under enough pressure and bowling enough wicket-taking deliveries. So I suspect at this point, I think Pakistan will get a small lead.
I'm backing Pakistan to get a lead as well. I mean, I thought 350, something like that, in the first innings was more of a, you know, would have been more of a working total for England, and they fell 70 short of that. It was ultra entertaining cricket. I mean, the ball was being smacked here, there, and everywhere. England scoring it over five runs and over. But I just thought little things. Jack Leach came in and played a reverse sweep first ball and was bowled. Now Mark Wood at the other end was showing us, you know, a certain degree of aptitude. In fact, I thought Wood actually batted really well. He hit eight fours in his 36 not out. And then even Jimmy as well went for reverse. I know that's his shot, but it seemed to me at that stage, Jimmy could have just blocked for Wood and get Wood on strike and see whether they could, you know. I mean, at one stage, Wood was almost hitting every ball for four. So just little things like that towards the end. But it seems unfair to blame the tail enders for England not getting 300 plus. I mean, the top order needs to do the job, and as we were saying earlier, three of them were bowled out. So you know, well played, Abra. You know, that's an excellent thing to do on the first day, to actually with a leg break bowler or a mystery spinner, whatever, with your googlies, take down three of the top seven, and that's exactly what he did. So fair play to him. I suppose the one person who might just be sitting there feeling frustrated tonight, really frustrated, would be Joe Root, who was playing so calmly in the first part of his innings, just knocking the ball around, taking singles, and then he got pinned by one that pitched just on leg stump, spun, bounced, and hit him on the back leg, and he was pinned LBW, ball just hitting the top of off stump, which I thought was actually a really big moment in the day, because I thought Root would have been, could have played Abra and would have mastered him and would have dealt with him. But so that wicket to me was a really big moment, and Abra knocked him over, and that set England back.
Yeah, I actually think Root and Pope to me were the two best players off spin, because they're so nimble and they use the crease brilliantly. Both of them get right back on their stumps to play the shorter ball and then get out of the crease down the wicket to try and repel the fuller one. So they're upsetting the bowler's length, the spinner's length. Also, they both have the reverse sweeps and so on as an option. So it must be a nightmare actually bowling to both of them. And I think they certainly, until he was out, I thought Ollie Pope really judged it well. He worked the ball off his pads through the leg side. He was looking to come down the wicket, but he didn't go for the big shots. He was just trying to upset the bowler's length and nudge it into the offside sometimes, occasionally playing the reverse sweep. He started his innings, didn't he? First ball with the reverse sweep. Amazing, actually. Incredible range
first
of shots.
Ball.
And Root, first ball. And Root also very nimble at the crease and reading the length excellently. I think he was actually just done for length on that, the one that dismissed him. It was just a tad fuller than maybe he thought, or maybe just a little quicker. And it spun a lot. It spun from leg stump to off stump, and he was pinned on the back leg. And in fact, the umpire didn't give him out, and it was reviewed, and obviously he had to go in the end. The umpires had a difficult day, didn't they? There was a number of decisions that they had to have reviewed and had to be overturned, but it's always so difficult being an umpire with spinners on and the ball turning like that.
Yeah, Maria Rasmus said at the start of the day, I mean, Angus went out and had, just having a chit-chat with him. He said, I think we're in for a busy day today. And he was right. It's tough on big spinning pitches for umpires to get it right. And there was another one that, towards the end as well, when Shafiq was caught behind. England went up. How's that? Everyone went up, given not out. England reviewed it straight away. Yep, and there was a feather. I think Shafiq knew he'd hit it, but of course you just hope to get away with it. And so that was the second wicket, and the first wicket for Jack Leach. I thought Jack, but he just bowled a bit short. There was always a ball that the batters could escape with, really. I think that was the problem with Jack Leach. But I mean, he's going to be England's big player for England tomorrow. He's on 99 Test wickets, so one short of the 100. It's a big day. There'll be a bit of focus on him tomorrow. And I thought Baba played so well this evening. He just looked so in control and absolutely nailed on for 100. I thought in the first innings, the last Test match, he looked nailed on for 100 fairly early on. I remember saying at lunchtime, goodness me, they're going to take something to dismiss him here. And in the end, he made about 130 odd, and he was out to, I think, well, he was a big surprise when he was dismissed. And you feel that he is such a, it almost goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that he is such an important player for them tomorrow. If he gets in and goes, and bats the most of the day, then Pakistan will be in a great position by the close of play. But I'm not sure how they're going to dismiss him. Well, it may be the pace bowlers. What do you think of this so far then, Yoz? That we had a couple of those in Jimmy Anderson. He did take a wicket. He was taken off. We saw a burst from Mark Wood. Nothing from Stokes and nothing from Ollie Robinson so far. Do you see that, even though it's a pitch that's offering to the spinners, do you think they'll have a bit more of a role to play tomorrow, reverse swing perhaps?
Definitely. I think it's a much more crumbly pitch than the Royal Pindi one. That will scuff the ball up, abrade the ball pretty significantly. I think they're saving Robinson for when the ball reverses. I mean, I thought he really exceeded himself in that first game, the way he bowled reverse swing towards the end of the match. Never sort of imagine he would do it as well as that. And so I think he's already almost emerged as possibly England's best reverse swing bowler with Anderson. And obviously Wood will have an impact as well. So you want to save those three for when the ball is starting to go, which will be probably early tomorrow after, you know, 5 to 10 overs. It might just be in the right conditions. So probably start with spinners and then have the seams come on afterwards. Obviously, Wood was brought on after only 2 overs from Anderson because Bubba was in and had taken Bubba's wicket in a couple of the T20 games. There also is a general feeling, I think, that Bubba is a little bit susceptible to short pitch bowling. He likes to get leg side of the ball and try and sort of cuff it or uppercut it on the offside rather than pulling and hooking. And sometimes that gets him into trouble, as it did in the first test when he was bounced out. So I think that was the tactic Wood tried, and he bowled fast, didn't he? But they actually played him pretty well. So he's going to probably need to mix it up a bit when he comes back and try and find that late swing as well. I just wonder whether England might rue not picking another spinner, actually. There's obviously the 18-year-old Rian Ahmed available, and I just think perhaps they could have done with an extra spinner, looking at the state of the pitch.
Yeah, big call, isn't it, to pick him at the age of 18. He's only played 3 first-class matches. But, yeah, the conditions, I think, cried out for a second spinner for England. They've got Root and they've got Will Jacks as backup. And Jacks took 6 wickets in the first innings on his debut test match. And Root has got, you know, enough test match wickets, enough first-class wickets to have some sort of say on this surface. But it felt as though it cried out for a second spinner. I mean, quite tough on Folks. They left him out and they played Ollie Pope to try to increase their bowling options. I mean, you could see what they were doing with Mark Wood, can't you? They want that extra pace. We looked at Rawalpindi. There were times when he thought, yeah, could we just force the issue with that extreme pace? And he did get up. He got up 96, 97 miles an hour today. That's the bizarre thing about watching it. When you watch it with the naked eye, Barber just seemed to play it so easily at times, even though there's great pace, but the pitch is, you know, like it was in Rawalpindi, is slow. So you can see what they were trying to do with their team. You're not going to leave Jimmy Anderson out. You're not going to leave Robinson out. They wanted Wood in the side. They already left Folks out. You can only pick 11, Yoz, can't you? I mean, that's the problem. But Rian Ahmed could bat, but it would be quite a big call to leave Jacks out, say, and play Rehan Ahmed, wouldn't it? I mean, Jacks had a solid game in that first match, wickets and useful runs, and he actually made some useful runs here today. But you thought this pitch is sort of crying out for Monty and Graham Swan, isn't it? That sort of combination. And then I think it would be quite tricky for Pakistan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Right, so you've had your 8-hour journey from Rawalpindi to Multan. Tell us a bit about that, and also how is it in Multan compared to Rawalpindi?
Well, totally different. I mean, we were staying in Islamabad, so we were travelling from Islamabad to Rawalpindi, and they're quite close together, and the journey to the ground each day was about 20 minutes. And Islamabad is a very ordered, green city, new city, and you know, all laid out in grids. This is completely different. The drive down is actually stunning, down through the hills. From north of Pakistan, from Islamabad down through the hill. I mean, it reminded me at times of being in you know, California. Some of the terrain, the rugged terrain north of Los Angeles. Anyone who's been in that area will know what I'm talking about. And then down through the hills. There's motorway all the way. It's incredible, but motorway all the way. Toll road. We stopped a couple of occasions. And then down onto the plains, sort of flatlands, orange groves, we drove through into Multan. And then that was what you might consider to be more traditional Pakistan, you know, teeming streets, food stalls, bustling roads, all sorts on the roads. So into our hotel. But I think what's been noticeable here, Yoz, is the extreme security there. You know, they've really thrown everything at it. We were free to go out in Islamabad. You know, we would get in our bus and off we would go. Here, it's very different. We wanted to go out and see some of the sites on our sort of nominal notional day off after the travel day here. But no, we couldn't. You'd have to get permission from someone high up in the police to have an escort out into the city. And so we spent the day in the hotel, which we didn't think was going to happen. And that was one of the days. Actually, yesterday we went to the ground, and then on the way back, we had this special detail with us. We had armed guards to go and see some of the sites of Multan. But we got a real indication tonight of the level of security and the amount of security that's been thrown at this test match to get it on. So tonight, in Rawalpindi, there's a players' convoy where they shut all the roads off. And we weren't a part of that. So we had to wait for them to open the roads up and just wait in our minibus patiently if we got our timing wrong. Tonight, we were allowed to come back in that sort of players' bubble, if you like. And this is about 10 miles. So if you can imagine London, sort of 10 miles of London or Manchester or whatever, where all the roads are shut off and special lights are put up and police are lining just about the whole route, then that was what it was like this evening. You really got a sense of the scale of it. And so we were coming back into the main part of Multan, and there were side roads, and there were loads of people just waiting at the end of the side roads for the blockade to be lifted. And they were all, you know, there were soldiers all the way on the way preventing people from coming out of the side roads. Can you imagine that? You know, imagine Euston Road blocked off and all the roads along it, people just waiting to come out, but armed guards or soldiers, police or whatever, blocking all the side roads, say along Euston Road, the road that goes from Paddington all the way through to King's Cross. That was what it was like this evening. Eerie, actually. It was quite eerie.
It's amazing, isn't it? And you're not gonna funnily enough, I have experienced a similar thing, and it wasn't in India or Pakistan. It was in the British Isles. It was actually in Wales, right? Mm. I'm not making this up. I actually attended Cardiff against Swansea, right? At football, obviously.
Yeah.
And I travelled with the Cardiff supporters from the Cardiff ground on a Sunday morning. They made the match a Sunday morning start so that people couldn't get stuck into the beers too early. And we left in a convoy of 40 coaches from Cardiff all the way along the M4. The roads were cordoned off and we had police outriders and helicopters following us. And then when we got to Swansea, the whole city was shut down. There were those barricades along all the main roads so that nobody could come near the vehicles. We went in convoy to the ground, the Swansea football ground, and were shunted into a side entrance to the ground and caged in, and the same on the way out. And it was the most hostile environment of a sporting event I've ever experienced. Cardiff against Swansea, absolutely unbelievable. But a similar situation. People were sort of almost cowering in their houses, you know, not allowed to go out because of the sort of potential for obviously some kind of confrontation. And amazing. So it does happen sometimes in the British Isles, but I can imagine in your situation, there were just, you know, 15 times more military and police around to ensure the security of everything.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that surprised me. You just realised the scale of it. You know, you think a 10-mile route, and also a lot of the route as well, there was sort of special lights put up, so someone must have gone along putting all those up, you know, for miles and miles and miles to illuminate the route. And it was a really eerie process. It almost looked like there was no one around, but if you peered through the dark, you could see people, you know, in the side road just waiting to come out. It's almost like penned in. Is it good for the sort of local economy when that sort of thing happens? You know, probably not. And you know, it's actually probably really irritating for the locals and all that to get a test match on here in Malta. New Zealand are due here in early January as well. There's another test match being played here. I presume they're going to do something similar for New Zealand as well. So you know, it is to get a game on. It just shows the level that they have to go to locally.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose
it's understandable, isn't it?
It is understandable, though, isn't it? Because they have had bad experiences. Obviously, the incident with the shooting during the Sri Lanka series, 2009, I think it was, wasn't it? And also, there was a bomb at the hotel when New Zealand were on tour in Pakistan around the same sort of time.
That was a bit earlier, wasn't it? I think. Yeah.
I mean, those are obviously historical moments, but they're still kind of fresh in the memory of probably many people who were connected with it, and it just sends shockwaves through the sporting world, and players won't travel, will they? Mm. So they have to kind of go over the top with their security plans.
Yeah. I mean, one thing where we are, that we're in this sort of hotel area here, where the England team hotel is over the way, about, I don't know, I can see it from in the distance, I don't know, half a mile away, something like that. And the whole area is sealed off as well. So the locals can't, there's a park across the hotel from where we're staying, and it's a lovely park, but you can't go in it at the moment. So you've got a week where the locals can't exercise in that park. It's got a jogging track and people presumably promenade along it. You can't go in it. The roads are shut off. Although yesterday, the day before the game, I was on the roof of the hotel in the morning before we went to the ground to do our preview programme for Radio 5 Live. And I was just working away on my computer, and suddenly I hear this cack, 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 cack sound, and it was shots being fired. I thought for a moment, is that firecrackers going off? No, that sounds like gunshots. And it indeed was gunshots. There was some sort of local shootout, and I thought I'd get my phone out and I'll record, see if I can record what's going on from high up on the seventh floor. I'm not sure if that was the right thing to do, but you know, the journalist in me came out. But the journalist in me came out, but also one of the hotel staff came out and said, "Get in, sir, get in, get in." And they, you know, made me go off the roof and back into the hotel. And so, of course, we didn't know what it was to start with. Suddenly it was sort of two local gangs, some sort of a shootout. But it was, you know, it was quite sustained gunfire for about, you know, 20, 30 seconds. And you know, that was quite close to the England hotel, quite close to our hotel as well. Probably, you know, half a mile away, barely even that. Yeah. So that was.
The time I visited Pakistan, we were taken off limits into a tribal area when we were staying in Peshawar, to a tribal village, a normal village really, but in the tribal area, and you had to have a permit to be allowed in and all this. It was a normal-looking subcontinental town with, you know, shops on either side, but every shop sold guns, and you were able to go into a shop and point to various guns that were in the glass cabinets behind the desk and say, "Can I try that, please?" And they'd hand you a Kalashnikov or, you know, a Colt 45 or something. You'd go upstairs onto the roof of the shop and fire it into the distance and try it out. So their kind of culture of their gun culture is probably still quite prevalent. Yeah.
Well, I've never seen as many guns in a short space of time as I've seen since I've been in Pakistan. It's especially here in Multan. You know, there's so many armed police and armed military around. Anyway, that's some of the flavour of being here. Yoz, everything to play a cricket match. It seems a bit bizarre, really, just to play the grand old game of cricket. A cricket match that has been, fascinating today. We've had 12 wickets for 388 runs in 79.4 overs today. We have seen a guy take 7-4 on his debut. We've seen more aggression for England. We've seen 6 England players act to sweep shots. We've seen England score 77 runs from 50 balls of sweep shots. I mean, you know, England have swept today, scored runs, profited, but also perished as a result of the sweep. And after the first day, I think Pakistan, they have the advantage. They will have to bat last, but if they can get a decent lead, thanks to Barber and also Shaquille as well, I thought played really well tonight. He was nice and positive. He blocked in the first game, but he was positive today, 32 not out. If Pakistan can get a lead, then they can, you know, put some pressure back on England with those leg spin bowlers, and in particular, Abrar Ahmed. So it's all for England to do, I think, on the second day. Pakistan have the advantage after the first day.
It sounds like then that's a reinvention of the old phrase, live by the sword, die by the sword, to live by the sweep, die by the sweep. Well, we'll probably see more of it when England bat in the second innings. And one other thought, by the way, I've started a new Twitter handle, which is the Analyst Pod. So if you go onto at the Analyst Pod, you'll find pictures that we've posted from our various exploits. And today I've put a little picture on of Abrar Ahmed's 2 deliveries in a sort of split screen, 2 different grips that you can kind of see. So the idea behind that Twitter handle is just to sort of post our thoughts or our experiences or our pictures or whatever. And get some thoughts from you, the listeners, as well. What you want to hear about, observations, etc. Thoughts that you have as you're watching or listening to the game. And we'll keep updated on that Twitter feed. So it's at the Analyst Pod. We'd love to hear from you. And please check it out. And we'll be back tomorrow to review the second day's play. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.